What about parcels that came through the station?
Yeah, you get lots of people, lots of parcels. There was two drivers attached, basically, to Woodlesford Station, Jack and Jake Gibbs. Pair of brothers lived, I think they both lived in Hunslet in Leeds. One of them was a really nice guy. Jack Gibbs was a really nice guy. Jake was a bit bigger and very grumpy. I mean, he was the epitome of grumpiness, was Jake. And they were unique in they both wore wooden clogs, the old wooden clogs. And they used to drive these two trucks in clogs, deliver all the parcels. One's used to deliver the parcels that came on the passenger trains into Woodlesford, and the other one used to deliver goods that came into Hunslet Lane Goods Depot. Jake used to do the goods depot stuff, and Jack used to do the parcels for the local area, Alton and Rothwell and what have you. And often when we'd nothing to do, and that seemed to be an awful lot of the time, we used to go ride in the truck with Jack Gibbs delivering the parcels.
And can you remember where you went?
Oh, yes. He had a favourite for me because he knew I was scared. There was a place called Alton Hall, which I understand nowadays is a high-quality hotel. But at that time, it was an asylum. And he used to always give me the parcel and say, "You take that in there, Barry." And I used to go in this place, and I was terrified. There was all kinds of things happening in there that were really frightening to a young boy. But he used to do it just for the hell of it. But all over Rothwell, we used to deliver parcels. And lots of fun riding on the back of the truck and inside the truck, you know.
And what was the routine with the parcels? How did that work? What kind of a train did they come on?
Well, generally, they'd come on a standard passenger train. I don't think, not in my time, there was never enough parcels coming through there to warrant a parcels van on a train. They were all just in the guards van. You maybe get a couple of dozen parcels come. One of the great things that used to happen at that time was the PLA, the passengers' luggage in advance. When people used to go on holiday, if you bought a ticket on the railway, you could have your baggage, your suitcases, sent in advance 3 or 4 days before you went to Brighton or wherever you were going. And it was 5 and 6 pence at that time to send a suitcase from Woodlesford to anywhere in the British Isles by train. And the same thing in the return. You'd send it for 5 and 6 pence, they'd bring it back afterwards. And, of course, there was lots of that. People, it was a very good deal. You didn't have to hump your baggage and things. People always wanted to send their PLA, passengers' luggage in advance.
And where did they go on holiday to?
Down in the West Country was popular. Torquay was always a popular place. And North Devon coast, Minehead was popular. It was popular, generally West Country, where people went. One of the things they did do, they used to take stuff to the buffer depot at Patrick Green. Well, the buffer depot at Patrick Green, to the best of my knowledge, was a thing that was set up during the war by the Ministry of Food, where emergency supplies of food, big tins of corned beef and powdered milk and powdered eggs and what have you, were all kept. And a store was kept of food like that, certainly up to the 1960s, and they used to have they'd have wagons being taken up there when Robin Hood Station was still open. They'd take a full loaded wagon into Patrick Green Buffer Depot, but also Jake Gibbs would deliver things from Hunslet Lane to the Patrick Green Buffer Depot. But I think that's all long gone now. I don't know what happened to all the food and stores that were in there, but they used to tell me there was lots of tins of corned beef in there, because I was a corned beef freak when I was a kid. I loved it.
When you say a wagon, did they have a rail connection to it?
Yeah. You could take push a wagon straight into Patrick Green. In fact, I think that was how it was designed in the first instance, that it would be used that way, and the whole place was stocked up by pushing wagons into Patrick Green.
So is there anything else that you can remember about Jack and Jake?
Oh, yes. The one of the problems with the parcels, the light parcel delivery that Jack Gibbs used to do, was they used to get wet when it rained. He had a tarpaulin sheet thrown over the back of the truck, but it didn't keep them dry all the time. So he asked somebody in Hunslet Lane, where the wagon was kept, if they could erect some kind of cover on it that would make it easy to get in and out. And as the wagon was an old wagon at that time anyway, they wouldn't buy a new one on the railway, somebody made a kind of wooden cage on the back of this truck out of 4x2 timbers bolted together, and he had a big tarpaulin right over the top of it. And it was terrific from then on. It was like a proper lorry that you would get today, but it was actually a flatbed truck with this thing bolted on the back, you know.
And his brother didn't have that.
No, Jake didn't have that. He just had the tarpaulin sheet on it.
Do you remember the wagons themselves? What kind they were?
I thought they were Austin's, but I wouldn't be absolutely certain. I think they were Austin trucks. Most of the there was only two kinds of trucks on the railway at that time: the Scammel three wheeled wagons and these Austins that they'd use from Hunslet Lane.
What was the inside of the station building like?
The inside of the station was a light kind of lime green colour. It was very well kept inside that station. There was a lovely fireplace and a waiting room, and the porters would light the fires in the waiting room in the winter, and it was lovely and warm in there. It was a very bright and nice station. Had good windows on, and they weren't broken at that time, and they weren't boarded up, you know.
How many other rooms were there?
There was the main entrance area where people queued up to get their tickets, and there was the waiting room to one side, and then there was the storeroom that we kept all the parcels in, and the butter kiss that was being delivered to the local cinema in Woodlesford. We always wanted to open the packets of butter kiss. Everybody was crazy on it, but we never got any. But it was a good place. There was lots of gas lights around. They were the only drawback, that in the evenings it looked dark and dingy and very yellow. The green took on a strange colour with the gas lighting. But there was no electricity at all on the station. It was all gas lights.
And you had a booking office behind that?
We had a booking office, yeah. It was a little tiny window that raised up. And the booking office behind was quite big. I would think it was 25 foot square, maybe more, maybe 30 foot square. And the station master's office was off that. So you couldn't really get to the station master's office without going through the booking office. And the goods department was at one side and the passenger department was at the other side. It was like having the big tall stools in Dickensian days where you sat with the quill pen, you know. And if you were on your own in the evenings when it was dark, it was quite spooky there. There was no noise, no lights, just a flickering gas mantle. Yeah. Very, very scary. You could see or you could tell when trains were coming at night, because the gas mantle, the first indication a train was coming was the gas mantle would start to shake. And then as the train got nearer, it shaked more and more, and depending on what kind of train it was, it would really rattle. The glass would start to rattle. And in the latter days of steam, they used to use double-headed 9Fs to bring coal into Skelton Grange. And my goodness, they used to rattle our lights to those as they came past. I don't know how heavy those engines were, but the whole station used to shake.
As a clerk, did you have to write a lot of things down?
Yeah, we had to. I don't know what sort of things they were, but I seem to be writing. I always had a pocket full of pens to be writing, but most of the writing was done by the goods clerks. They had these horrible lead pens, indelible lead pens, that if you got them wet, they went on your clothes and got in your hands. You couldn't get the damn colours off. I think they wrote on the labels on the wagons, on the mineral wagons, they wrote things on there. And, of course, they were indelible, and once you got it on, you couldn't get it off. And it got in your hands and your clothes, and my mother used to go crazy.
The booking office seems to have a kind of brick-built extension with barred windows that must have been added on at some point. Can you remember that?
I remember the barred windows, yeah, but why that would be? I suppose they had cash there overnight. They had a safe. Not that it was. I don't think it was used when I was. I think what we used to do was put the money in a leather pouch and send it off with the guard on one of the trains to Leeds at the end of the day. One of the things, I was young and healthy then, and I used to jump up and grab a steel bar that was like a reinforcing rod that went right across the station. And I used to do pull-ups. I used to do chin-ups on the bar, and I could do 20 or 30 chin-ups. I could even do them on one hand in those days. I'd need a lift now to get me on there.
It sounds like a remarkable atmosphere, a remarkably easy atmosphere, a working atmosphere.
It was a joy. It was the most joyous work I ever did in my whole life, and if it had been reasonably well paid and it hadn't been for that nasty man Dr. Beeching, I would have been there yet, but times didn't work that way. But there were such things that you never had anywhere else. The fact that Bentley's Yorkshire Brewery had hospitality at 10:30 in the morning and hospitality at 3:30 in the afternoon, and I was a kid, not old enough to drink, but somebody stuck a pint pot in my hand and said, come on Barry, it's time for the brewery, and off we went over to the cellars at the brewery, and the man tapped the barrel and he'd give you a pint of beer at 10:30 in the morning, and all the people that worked on the station were all entitled to the pint of beer in the morning and the pint of beer in the afternoon. But, you know, as with all things, somebody does it to excess, and eventually I believe it was stopped because the signalman, or a relief signalman, not the regulars at Woodlesford, but a relief signalman, took the 5-gallon billy can with water and filled it up with beer, and all hell broke loose, and the brewery stopped them going, and, you know, there was no more to be had. But when I was there, there was a pint every morning and one in the afternoon. It was lovely.
Do you remember anything about whiskey?
Yeah, whiskey. We used to get the whiskey vans used to come down. They'd have a couple of vans attached to a train that they'd bring from Mark Inch in Glasgow with Haig's whiskey on. And one of my jobs was going over there, and whilst they unloaded the van with the whiskey on, because there was always breakages, not usually many, but there'd be, you know, a couple of cases. They were in cases of 12 bottles of whiskey. Cardboard, and I guess when they were loading them, they threw them in. Some would get broken, and it's tragedy. It smelt lovely there. I never drank whiskey, but it smelt lovely sitting in that van there while they unloaded it. And then I guess they made a claim against the railway, and I was there to check how many bottles were broken. But it wasn't, there wasn't that many. There'd be, you know, half a dozen maybe on a van, but it really smelt. Half a dozen bottles of whiskey in a enclosed wooden van really smells, and on a hot day it smells even better.
So that was a wooden railway van that was actually put into the sidings.
Yeah, 16-ton railway van. They had a line going into the sidings at Bentley's Yorkshire Brewery, and so they used to push the van right into Bentley's sidings. They had their own siding, and they'd unload it there directly into the brewery. But I think later on, when that line was given up, I think they used to have to take it round on the with a lorry. But at my time, they had a siding.
Do you remember other wagons and railway vans coming into the goods yard?
Yeah, occasionally you'd get things through the night. Sometimes there'd be freight trains coming through, and they'd have a problem with a wagon on a freight train, and they'd drop it off into the siding at Woodlesford. And, you know, one day you went in there and they had bogey bolsters in there, the big long flat trucks that had got a flat wheel, as some, you know, a brake had locked on, and it had been sliding along the line, and it had worn a wheel flat, and the noise that they make is terrible. And so they'd unhook it from the train, stick it into the siding at Woodlesford, connect the train up again and leave it there and take it away later. But there was lots of wagons used to go through Woodlesford. I was always interested in the different kinds of wagons that British Rail had at that time. They had wagons for all kinds of eventualities. I'm sure much more than they have now.
Was goods delivered to the goods yard and taken away from there by rail?
Not a great deal of goods into Woodlesford. I think by the time I was working there, most of the goods were going into Hunslet Lane and were being delivered from there. It was only full wagon loads that were being taken through the station, you know, into the Skelton Grange power station and into Bentley's Brewery. I don't think anybody else got any full wagon loads.
And what about the colliery? Can you remember anything about the way that the trains used to come from Waterhaig?
Not really, but it was obviously the majority of work at Woodlesford Station was freight from Waterhaig Colliery. Magical in those days. It's hard to believe that it's all disappeared. But it was it certainly gave a lot of work. I don't actually think that the coal from Waterhaig went to Skelton Grange. But Skelton Grange was the other big work for the station, because coal used to come from all over the place, Barnsley mostly, into Skelton Grange. But every day there was a couple or three train loads of mineral wagons, 16-ton mineral wagons, probably 70 on each train, and you get two or three trains a day in there.
And all the invoicing used to be done through the station.
Right, yeah. Old Tom, Whistling Rufus, he used to collect the labels and come back and check them off in the station. And we had at various times different clerks working there, some of them who were destined to do the freight work. I had a friend who came from Hunslet Lane, a guy called Clive Allsop. He was there for a certain period of time, but he did the freight rather than the passenger. I mean, Tommy Swaby was really good with all the young guys like myself there. They tutored them in all aspects of railway work. And I learned a great deal about signalling and general railway work. It had been my kind of idea to try and become a station master, because Jack Perry, who was chief clerk at the time, always boasted that he was the youngest qualified station master in England. And he came from Wakefield. He was a local guy, and he qualified as a station master at 21, and that seemed quite young to me at that time. And as I was only 16, I figured I might still have a chance of beating him. And so off I went to night school regularly.
What about the signal box? Did you go in there very much?
I spent as much time as I could get in the signal box, because signalling was the most difficult part of becoming a station master. I always felt in my time on the railways and since that signalmen were always underpaid. It was a very, very difficult, I agree it was a monotonous job sometimes, but a very, very responsible and difficult job. The knowledge that they had to have, without referring to books, they had to have it in their head and know the rules and know how to respond, and respond very quickly. It fascinated me how much work these guys got through.
And do you remember the signalmen who worked there?
No, I don't remember. I only remember them as nice guys. I don't remember the names. It's too long ago. They were all very helpful, and they knew that I was keen on learning how to work a signal box, and they would let me work it in the evenings. They would let me do all the work and press all the bells and pull all the levers and enter all the stuff in the book. Because it is a difficult and heavy learning curve. And I don't know how quickly they learned, but I think it would take me 100 years to learn.
What else can you remember about the signal boxes?
Well, in the evenings, when we were working on the station, usually working overtime, and it was dark, and it always seemed to be winter, I don't know why, all the signalmen, all the signal boxes and all the stations were all linked together by a telephone line control or something, and they'd sit and talk to each other and ask how the football was going and how Auntie Florrie was going. And one night, I mean, I was studying signalling, so I was going to night school and I was learning the bell codes for it, and I heard one signalman say to another one, "Tom, were that 5-5 that just gave me?" 5-5 is the train divided when the train is about to run away, when the carriages are running away from the engine, or they're going in different directions. I mean, that is just the panic button. That's the Mayday, Mayday call. And it was so funny, because we'd been talking about football, and the signalman came on and said, "Well, that 5-5 they gave me." Panic breaks out.
And he had given him 5-5.
Yeah, had.
What had happened?
Apparently, a coupling had gone on a mineral wagon, and of course they were only, the braking system wasn't very good on them, and off the wagons went in one direction, not very fast. I mean, it was going very slowly, but it had actually parted company, had the engine from some of the wagons, or one of the wagons.
And do you remember where that was?
Yeah, it was somewhere down near Waterloo signal box. And I think Waterloo was either the recipient of the 5-5 or the guy who was giving the 5-5.
So they managed to sort it out?
Oh, they managed to sort it out, yeah, I think it was no problem. I mean, the necessary action was taken, you know, and points were changed and signals were closed, but he was just checking on it. You know, because the only communication really that signalmen had was the bell codes between the signal boxes, except this direct telephone line that everybody could had access to.
Were there other accidents that you can remember?
Yeah, they were building at Sturton. They started building a freight terminal, a freight yard, a huge big interchange, and they had to scrape a tremendous amount of earth away. And there was hundreds and hundreds of full train loads of spoil being shipped out of Sturton. And lots of it came through Woodlesford, heading Normanton Way. And one day, a mineral wagon, the handbrake, the long steel bar handbrake, had obviously broken or been bent or knocked or something. And it fell off the side of the wagon and impaled itself into the ballast under a sleeper, lifted the wagon right up in the air, tipped all the 16 ton of spoil out, and that tips all the rest of the wagons. A half a dozen wagons behind it all came off, all tipped over, and the whole line was closed for days whilst they had to clear the spoil that had been tipped. And I think it was both ways, the line in both directions.
So the passenger trains would have had to be stopped?
Everything. Stopped. The whole line was blocked. There was no trains coming through Woodlesford at that time.
And where was that accident then?
That was between Sturton and Waterloo Box.
Did they stop the trains then at Woodlesford and put people onto buses into Leeds, or there were no trains at all?
I don't remember the trains coming at all. I think they diverted them at Wakefield or somewhere before they got to Woodlesford.
And it actually took days to get it right, did it?
It took a couple of days to get before they got it fully opened again. And, of course, that was a problem for the Skelton Grange power station, which was taking freight in and out at that time. I think they could get into Skelton Grange by when they were coming from Normanton side. They could pass the station and into Skelton Grange. It was the accident was beyond Waterloo Box. The sidings into Skelton Grange were very close to Waterloo Box.
Yeah, you came off Waterloo Box.
Yeah, and so it was somewhere between Waterloo Box and Sturton was the accident, but it was a big problem.
So did you get to ride on many of the trains?
If it was going to be, it was Thursday, we'd take the wages, I'd get the wages, the little brown envelopes in the Hessian bag, and start at, I'd get on the shunt engine and go down to the far signal box at Altoffs Junction and start delivering the wages to the men in the signal boxes. And I'd walk on the line all the way back from Altoffs. But one of the joys of getting on the shunt engine, some mornings, not every day or every time, but occasionally the driver would say, "Do you fancy a bacon sandwich, Barry?" And he had a shovel there. My grandchildren tell us the story, Grandad, of the shiny shovel. And he pour some water over the shovel, stick it in the firebox till it was clean, and then a little piece of butter, bacon, and an egg in there. And I used to have a tea cake with a bacon and egg in for my breakfast about 11 o'clock going down on the shunt engine before I started the walk back.
So it's not an apocryphal story then about cooking on the footplate?
I've heard it many times. In fact, I asked a fireman on a Malaigue recently. I went on the Fort William Malaigue steam service, and I went up to the fireman and I said, "Can I have a look at your shovel? Have you got a shiny shovel?" And he said, "No," I said, "we don't have one." But the shovel on the shunt engine from Woodlesford, it was like chromium. It was obviously with use, but it was really clean. You could did eat your breakfast from it. And never has a bacon sandwich tasted better.
What was it like delivering the wages to the men then? What kind of a reaction did you get every week when you took that little brown pay packet? Did they share with you how much money they were earning?
I knew how much they were earning because I'd put the money in the pay packet, but they were always very pleased to see me, I have to say that. But I got all the flack when they didn't get paid their overtime that they'd worked, so they'd blame me for not putting the money in the pay payslips. I mean, I only counted the money out and put it in the envelope. I had nothing to do with working it out. But they never said anything if they were overpaid, but they always moaned if they didn't get their overtime.
Sigelman and drivers were famous for a kind of love-hate relationship. Did you ever come across any of that?
No, not really. They were very, very friendly. I mean, the only bloke doing any work was always the fireman anyway. Drivers were a level above that. Drivers would sit there and dictators, really.
What about the trains, the passenger trains that went through?
Passenger trains, yeah. There was quite a few passenger trains. There was the special, the Cudworth Mill Girls specials. That was the one they always told the stories about, the guys. They'd say, don't get on that 6 o'clock from Woodlesford to Cudworth, because all the guys, it's full of mill girls, and they'll have your clothes off in no time. And there was the stories about the naked man strapped to the inside of the window who was being attacked by the mill girls. I often thought about buying a ticket on that one, but... The Mill Girls special.
So they worked in Leeds and they went home on that train.
I don't know where the hell they worked, but I didn't get anywhere near that train. They said it was the 6 o'clock to Cudworth at night, but I always used to avoid it. I mean, I never travelled on it, but it was all women. They were all women from some mill somewhere. But of course, Hunslet Station was open in those days, because the line went from Woodlesford, Altofts, Normanton, Wakefield, Criggleston, Hague, Darton, Barnsley, Womwell, Elsicker, Chapeltown and Sheffield. It's funny how these things are imprinted. That's 50 years ago and I remember all the stations in sequence. I mean, Hunslet Station's long gone as well. Hunslet Station was closed in about 1960 or 61.
Because there were steam trains that went one way and diesel multiple unit trains that went the other way.
Well, most of the trains when I was working there were steam trains. There was the diesel multiple units were just coming in, really. Were taking over the short haul stuff into Leeds, but there was still an awful lot of steam.
What about the big expresses?
Yeah, all steam at that time. There was no, it was unusual for a Deltic diesel when the first Deltic diesels came through. I mean, I don't know when they started on British Rail with the big diesels, but I don't think it was much before 1960, because it was quite a unique event to have a Deltic diesel coming through instead of a steam train. But all the passenger expresses were all steam hauled at that time, in 1960.
Do you remember any of the passengers who used the station?
Oh, I remember a lovely, lovely young lady called Anne Ward. Strangely enough, Anne Ward. I took her home one night to meet my mother. Oh, my goodness. Anne Ward was, I guess she'd be my age now, she'll be 65. She lived in a house quite close to the station and travelled through there every morning. And she had a wow of a figure. And I used to lecture at her every morning. I decided that I'd just have to take her out one time and did so and wanted to run away with her, but...
And what are any other regulars that you remember? Older people?
I don't remember what they were. There was a couple of old ladies used to go there. Well, they seemed old ladies to me at the time, but they were all... Everybody was madly friendly. I mean, I have lived in London now for the last 30 years, and I find that it's a different world. I was up in Yorkshire a few weeks ago, and it's hard to believe the difference, but there is a huge difference between the way people communicate with each other in the north of England and in London. And everybody was friendly there. It was a very happy time and a happy station. And I'm sure that there are lots of young boys or old farts now like me who have spent, you know, many a happy month or year at Woodlesford Station and remember fondly Tommy Swaby and all the rest of the staff that worked there. Great spot.
So what happened to you after Woodlesford?
After Woodlesford, I went to Robin Hood Station, which was a freight-only place at that time and handled just coal trucks. And I was only there on a temporary basis, as the clerk who was normally there was off sick or something like that. And I spent about 5 or 6 weeks there. And then I anticipated going back to Woodlesford as a booking clerk. but that was not to be. Dr. Beecham was coming on the wires at that time, and I was transferred to Leeds City Station to the parcels office, working on the what they call the inwards link, writing out the delivery sheets for the truck drivers on all the parcels that came into Leeds for delivery. And they had about 43 different rounds there, 43 trucks every morning used to go out with all the parcels for delivery across the city. And we used to write the, certainly on the night shift, if you were, I was working three shifts, 6 to 2, 2 to 10 and nights, and except Mondays, you started at 5 o'clock on Monday, because that was the fish train from Hull, so you had to do the fish deliveries. They were first. But it was huge. They'd probably 3,000 or 4,000 parcels come into Leeds City Station overnight, and we'd write the delivery sheets out for the drivers the following day. And then that was on the night shift. On the afternoon shift, you were doing the parcels that were being sent out from Leeds, places like Grattan's and Kay's catalogue people. They would bring thousands of parcels in the evening. The truck drivers would bring them in, ditch them on the parcels dock, and then you'd have to weigh them. And we had one clerk sit in a wooden box on an open dock. It was freezing cold in the winter there. Usually it'd be a girl or a woman sitting in the wooden box with a pen and warm earmuffs on, and a paraffin heater in the bottom of this wooden box. And the clerk would shout out the weight of the parcel and where it was from and where it was going to and how much it was going to cost. And the clerk in the box would write it all down and produce a waybill for it, and away it would go. That was a miserable job. I hated that job more than anything else I ever did. And on the early turns in the morning, that was the most pleasant job for me, because I was in charge of the lost property and left luggage office at Leeds City Station. And that was a great job. We had half a dozen guys worked in the left luggage office, all green card, light duty men, and a bigger set of comedians I've never met in a lifetime. And I used to do all the paperwork for the left luggage and lost property office. And, of course, all the perishable stuff that came in, lost lobsters and crabs, I used to buy for my father for, you know, 2 shillings. You buy a 3-pound lobster for 2 shillings. Wonderful.
But Woodlesford was the better job.
Oh, Woodlesford was a job on its own. It was in a class on its own. I have done lots of things since that time. I, needless to say, didn't last on the railway at Leeds City Station very long. It was in the early 60s, so I was out of there quickly and moved on to other things. And really, I never looked back, because the only job I was ever interested in was Woodlesford Station. It was lots of fun, but miserable money and no future because of Dr. Beeching.
Can you remember how much you earned?
Yes, I can. I started work at £245 a year.